You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
All right, now we can speak to Professor Patrick Bond, who has written an opinion piece suggesting that the recently concluded 2024 BRICS summit in Kazan, Russia, was nothing but an exercise in hype, hope and hopelessness. In an opinion piece published by IOL, Professor Bond argues that the upcoming COP29 climate conference will be the most interesting conference in history. Of course, BRICS is going to be part of that conference. He joins us now to tell us why. Prof, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Let's take a look at what you argue in your opinion piece about the economic imbalances right within BRICS. You also are of the belief that South Africa has missed critical openings in BRICS to enhance trade and infrastructure, citing that a number of projects or deals we entered into since last year's conference have actually not even materialized.
Yes, I'm so happy to join you in the listeners' studio. And one other big event, which is the 18th, 19th of November, is the G20. Mm. That's in Rio de Janeiro. And we host probably September in Johannesburg, 2025, the same body. And it's this very interesting mix, isn't it, where the BRICS Plus have come up. Now there are 9, but maybe 10. It's not just Brazil, Russia, India, China, yeah, South Africa, but it's also, as of January 1, Iran, but also UAE, an enemy, and maybe Saudi Arabia, they're in and out. And it's Egypt and Ethiopia. So we have 5 new members. One additional, Argentina, had been invited in Johannesburg last year, but then there was a right-wing government that walked away from that invitation. But then Azerbaijan, which is a place that Vladimir Putin influenced the choice of to host the next big climate summit, is like the last two, which were in Dubai, and before that, Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. So you have another UAE and Egypt. You have the BRICS really dominating as hosts of these institutions. Next year, it'll be Brazil. It'll be the, which is also where BRICS will be hosted. So we're seeing a sort of shift, at least, of hosting. But then the big question is there any difference between what the BRICS Plus and the West are doing? And this is the most important issue of our time. Today's probably the most important day. If Donald Trump gets elected, as polls suggest, then we can throw all these questions into the air and try to answer them in a different way, because it'll mean the U.S. pulls out of the United Nations Climate Summit. It means that probably AGOA will be cut very quickly, because Trump is so pro-Israel and South Africa takes a stance against genocide in the International Court of Justice. So we know Republicans don't want to continue with any appearance of being generous to South Africa under those circumstances. And then we'll also see a G20, which will be utterly chaotic, because we have a free market-oriented China going to the WTO to try to expand its powers, but the protectionist West, not just the US, but also Europe, it all seems in terrible flux. And the biggest problems of all, such as you say, Azerbaijan, the climate crisis, or the deglobalization and worsening inequality and financial volatility on the economic front, plus the geopolitical conflicts, Israel and genociding Palestine, and Russia destroying so many people, 600,000 Ukrainians, and infrastructure. It's an extraordinary time, and we have such fluid international politics, don't we?
We have such fluid international politics. I would like for us to explore the role of South Africa, right? More so when we speak of the recently concluded summit and we take a look at what to expect at COP. You suggest rather that South Africa seemed lost and out in the woods when the issue of global energy sovereignty, energy security and cooperation were discussed. Help us understand this with the narrative or what we are being told here at home about the just energy transition. All of these agreements that we're entering into, right, when it comes to renewable energy, etc. So if we are on an international stage and we seem out of our depth, what then should we make of it?
I think I would make of it that the interests of the big powerful forces in our economy, which are fossil addicted without any doubt, right? The energy intensive users group of 27 companies, they use 42% of our electricity. They provide 4% of our jobs. So it's a very carbon intensive and capital intensive group. And they don't really want any change. So in the big picture, South Africa and the BRICS, which have 51% of all global emissions with just 29% of GDP, including all 10, Saudi Arabia too, they have the same interests as the West. It's simply 3 points. Number one, don't make the emissions cuts that I think the rest of the world of scientists are saying you have to make these emissions cuts, otherwise it's planetary arson. Number two, don't ever admit that you made emissions. Don't do a polluter pays. You know, if you're a company and you pollute, then the National Environmental Management Act says, hey, well, you have a liability, clean it up. But that doesn't apply for greenhouse gas emissions, and that's partly because the U.S. itself in 2009, Barack Obama did a deal with Jacob Zuma and Lula, Wen Jiabao from China, Manmohan Singh from India. That was the famous room in the Copenhagen Convention Center that Obama barged into and said, let's do a deal. And part of that deal, which was codified in 2015 in the Paris Climate Agreement, no liability. Nobody ever emitted. So the loss and damage, like the Durban rain bomb that killed 500 or the flooding in Abeja and Cape Town that was so destructive, it never happened, or nobody did it. It's just an accident. That is a crucial point, right? Because it means the people who did the damage get away with it. And the third is, let's privatize the air. And that point, which is the carbon markets, emissions trading and offsets, all the sort of ideas that if you sell the right to pollute, and then you can find some project in the south to sequester emissions, to suck up the carbon you're doing in the north. Well, the BRICS in South Africa are part of that as well, and it's not working. The European Union has the most advanced of these, and that's called the European Union Emissions Trading Scheme. Just to give you a sense of it, Dudu, it costs about 110 euros a ton to buy the right to pollute of CO2. In February 2023, but then a year later it was down to 55, and now it's 70. So it's like asking bankers running these markets to solve the problem, the climate catastrophe. They can't even solve their own problem, so it's a ridiculous strategy. Fortunately, South Africa is built in to the BRICS and to the West, and against all the rest of us, I would say.
Because, Prof, one of the declarations on energy following the summit is highlighting the need for enhanced cooperation among BRICS nations as key energy producers and consumers. And so if we are now going to the summit and we have to either stick to what we have bound ourselves to when it comes to BRICS or aligning with what Western nations are saying, where do you see this going? Or rather, how should we even understand that? Can we really afford this one foot in, one foot out? We're not really sure what to do kind of posture, even unwittingly.
Yes, no, it's a classic, isn't it? It's talk left, walk right. The talk left is always to say we care about the climate catastrophe. We know South Africa's got a very coal-intensive economy. Maybe we should switch to methane gas, people point out. Well, that's 85 times worse as a potent greenhouse gas when it leaks. We know we have lots of leaks. Look at Bree Street, for example. So we have a big problem with our credibility. But the question of your, you know, sort of alliance is, will there be conflicts, really, especially because South Africa has the potential to do nuclear with Russia, very dangerous, very high risk. We know that there was corruption or, let's say, lack of transparency the last time the courts threw it out. The second big dilemma is, can South Africa survive having coal-intensive energy production? Can we switch faster? If the answer is no, then we have another interesting dilemma. This is where the main conflict with the West is. It's called carbon border adjustment mechanism import tariffs from Europe starting 2026. From the UK in early 2027. Oh, and my goodness, you know, if Trump wins today, then we can forget AGOA, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, probably on January 21 next year. So we're going to maybe see these opportunities to reconsider some of the high carbon intensive trade, the aluminium, the steel, the petrochems. Those will attract such high tariffs, given that our carbon tax is 38 US cents a ton. As I say, Europe's about $70 a ton now, and we don't think we're going to have a high carbon tax move so quickly to make up for that. So it does suggest there's some interesting conflicts. The protectionism of U.S. imperialism, European imperialism, is on full display, even with the Biden administration, right, with 100% import tariff on Chinese electric vehicles against Elon Musk's Tesla. Those are the sorts of quandaries. And to me, if you're standing outside this and sort of saying, don't make a deal with BRICS, don't make a deal with the West, actually work with the rest of the world to make the emissions cuts, to acknowledge a climate debt and to be able to move to these new energy systems without the obligations of a just energy transition partnership, which is debt based. It's not really a you know, a proper carrot, because it doesn't have much grant component. Yeah. And with the CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, we'll have to work around whether we can really afford to have like the number one CO2 emissions hotspot in the world, which is Secunda, or incredibly high emissions coming from BHP Billiton for imported bauxite turned into aluminium.
Prof, and then add to all of that, right, is the government of national unity, a conversation we cannot unfortunately take further, because even there, is there even certainty? But anyway, for today, we say thank you very much for your contribution, Professor Patrick Bond, Distinguished Professor of Sociology at the University of Johannesburg.